Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from a couple of sources. Let's start with an article from AARP, the Bulletin, Medicare Made Easy. Question. I turned 65 in October, but I didn't sign up for Medicare because I was displaced after Hurricane Helene. Can I enroll now, and will I have to pay a penalty for enrolling late? Extra time to enroll with no late penalty starts when the emergency is officially declared and lasts for 6 months after the disaster's declared end date or the end date of any extension. A special enrollment period, SEP, for a declared disaster also applies to people who miss other enrollment opportunities, like the annual open enrollment period, October 15th to December 7th, but it would only last 2 months after the disaster's end date. Additionally, if you rely on friends or family members who live in the disaster area for help making health care decisions, you may still qualify for the SEP, even if you don't live in the impacted area. To confirm if you're eligible for this SEP, call Medicare at 800-633-4227. A list of active disaster declaration areas can be found on the FEMA website. Next question. My Part D drug plan sent a letter telling me that a drug I take will no longer be covered. Can plans decide to stop covering a drug? Yes, they can. Medicare drug plans can stop covering a drug, add restrictions, or change the amount you pay for the drug after March 1st each year. If this happens, the plan must give you a 60-day advance notice and explain how the change will impact you. If a drug you're already taking is removed mid-year, the plan should keep covering it for the rest of the year, unless there's a safety concern or a generic is available. If a generic is available, the plan is not required to keep covering the brand name drug. If you would like to keep taking the brand name drug, you will need to file a formulary exception request with the plan. To find out more, visit cms.gov/Medicare/appeals-grievances/prescription-drug/exceptions. Question. I'm on Medicare Part D, but have seen lower drug prices online and through the drug discount programs. Does Medicare work with any of these options? While you can buy medications from online pharmacies or through drug discount programs, those purchases are separate from Medicare Part D. Any drug bought this way won't count towards your Part D deductible or out-of-pocket maximum, or be part of your Medicare claims history. If you expect to spend close to $2,000 on prescriptions this year, it's worth using your Part D benefit, as Medicare will cover your Part D drugs at no additional cost after you reach this spending limit. You can use the Medicare Plan Finder to help estimate your total drug costs. Drug discount programs and online pharmacies can offer savings, but they don't replace Medicare Part D. These programs cover a limited number of drugs, while Part D includes medications across all therapeutic categories, including many brand names. Note that if you don't sign up for Part D when you're first eligible, you may have to pay a late enrollment penalty. Now, from AARP, the magazine, let's look at this Jean Chatsky to the rescue. Will she outlive her money? Not Jean, this other person. A struggle women from a family with a long lifespan are hoping for a definite answer. The problem. Anne Pardes, 62, director of early childhood education at a religious school in Westchester County, New York, wants to retire in about 5 years. But given a family history of longevity, She's afraid she'll outlive her money, so she wants certainty, an accurate forecast of her retirement income. As a divorced single woman, she also worries about her long-term care and the cost of insuring it. I'm not sure my future old lady self can afford it, she told me. The advice. Creating a useful retirement plan requires a lot of detail, things like your future monthly expenses and future investment returns. But that involves guesswork, and unexpected events can derail even the best guesses. Financial advisor Margarita Perry of RBC Wealth Management was up to the challenge. First, she re-inventoried parties' assets and debts and got a picture of her cash flow. Parties' assets are chiefly $300,000 in a 403B retirement account, an $88,000 annuity, and about $150,000 in cash. Her only debt is her $350,000 mortgage. As for cash flow, she spends about $4,600 of her $6,500 take-home pay each month. She saves most of the rest, partly for a travel fund. Her someday dream is an African safari. Her monthly Social Security benefit would be about $3,600 if she claims at 65 or at 67, or over $4,000 if she waits until 70. After Perry studied Party's investments, she had some questions. Would parties consider selling and renting instead of continuing to pay her mortgage? Yes, she would. When might she need a new car? Not anytime soon. She plans to drive her 2018 Honda into the ground. Would she mind part-time work in retirement? She would like it. She would easily imagine teaching. What does she worry about? Longevity. Party's parents both lived until their 90s, though her mother had a massive stroke in her 70s. It's impossible to predict the path of your investments, health, and personal goals over 30 years, so planners use computers to explore outcomes under different scenarios. What happens if you sell the house? Delay Social Security. Work part-time. Their software calculates how often your plan will succeed. For parties, success is to not run out of money. When run through numerous possibility of investment returns, advisors differ on what rate of success to aim for. Perry regards success in at least 75% of the hypotheticals as a win. One of the four scenarios Perry investigated had parties retiring and taking Social Security at 67, working part-time until 70, and selling her home. Without long-term care insurance, however, she had only a 56% chance of success if she needed care. The final scenario Perry ran also had parties retiring at 67, working part-time and selling the house, but delaying Social Security until 70, and buying a long-term care policy. Here she had a 73% chance of success, close enough to 75% to make Perry favor this approach. In all scenarios, Perry increased the stocks in Party's portfolio to about 60% and added more to her travel budget. You're young, Perry said. Finally, Perry said long-term care insurance wasn't out of reach. She thought Party's good health enabled her to buy a hybrid life /long-term care policy. A suitable one might cost $1,200 a year over the next 10 years. The outcome? Newly confident that she can retire in 5 years if she wants, Parties is taking action. She's gotten two different quotes for long-term care insurance. She has decided she'll sell her house as soon as 3 years from now. And wanting more than a one-time financial checkup, she has hired a fee-only financial advisor, a woman who doesn't profit from any investments she recommends. Now that Parties has a plan, she says, I need someone to help keep me on track. Now, our next article from Psychology Now is entitled Set Yourself Free of the Past. When you liberate yourself from the lies that bind you, you'll never look back. We can all relate to Freddie Mercury blasting out, "I want to break free." Deep down, who doesn't want to shake off their shackles and soar toward a world with no limits? But somehow, it just isn't that easy. We put it down to our past, other people, or circumstances. But the truth is, all of that is holding us back is the voice inside our own head. Happily, we have the power to shut that nagging old parrot up and listen to something much kinder instead. Follow these ideas to make a start. Stop sabotaging yourself. Do you sometimes feel that you are your own worst enemy? Perhaps you buy that bag you can't really afford, eat donuts after a workout at the gym, wake up hungover because a job interview, or put off saying yes to a potentially exciting date. Coach Kim Morgan, barefootcoaching.co.uk, says it's self-sabotaging behavior, and many people use it in a misguided attempt to protect themselves from difficult experiences and emotions. The way through is to understand what drives your behavior. For example, you may feel deep down that you don't deserve that fulfilling job, healthy body, or loving relationship. Do it. Write down examples of healthy relationships in your life, past or present, work successes, or times you felt good about the way you look. It's the first step to turning negative beliefs positive, which, in time, leads to stronger self-belief. Get rid of pesky ants, A-N-T-S. We all have those annoying earworms with a harsh, critical voice that tell us we're not good, slim, clever enough, that we're a bad parent, partner, child, employee. Psychologists call them automatic negative thoughts, ANTS, and acknowledging and challenging them can be very helpful. For example, imagine yourself rushing and spilling tea on the carpet. You berate yourself. "I get everything wrong." Now, take that thought to court. Where is the evidence that that statement is true? Isn't it fairer to say you don't generally drop drinks? The verdict is we all slip up, especially when we're stressed. And the simple learning is to give ourselves more time in the future. Do it. When an ant invades your head, Emily Bradley, founder of the blog Imperfect Diva Blog, .wordpress.com suggests trying the stop technique. Stop. Take a breath, a deep one, 5 counts in, 5 counts out. Observe how you're feeling. Then notice how the world is still spinning. Forgive to flourish. During Nelson Mandela's 27 years in prison, he wrote, "To be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others." He forgave his captors. We can't all be Nobel Prize winners, but we can cut off the oxygen supply to old demons and watch them fade away. To heal, you need to release the emotion in whatever way it takes, whether that's yelling, crying, or bashing a pillow. Next, try to understand why someone acted as they did. Compassion heals wounds. Do it. Combining mind and body can release emotional blockers, says psychologist Nina Deanman. Do the wood chopper, standing with your legs apart, put your hands together above your head, this is your axe, inhale, As you exhale, bring your arms down fast, as in chopping wood, flopping forward from your waist and releasing a loud ah as you do so. Learn to be an imperfectionist. Perfection is impossible for any human, yet we all fall into the trap of seeking it. Who, in all honesty, can claim to have the ideal work-life-love balance, a dust-free home, and A-plus children with sparkling teeth? Aiming for it and inevitably failing can lead us to feeling worthless and too scared to do anything in case we don't excel. Do it. Embrace the Japanese concept of wabi-sabi, which finds beauty in the seemingly imperfective. Your child may be struggling at school, but they have so much else to give and be celebrated for. As a singer, Emily Bradley urges imperfectionists to create a blooper reel, imaginary, written down, or recorded, as a celebration of our off notes or banana slip moments, without which we would learn nothing. And finally, stop worrying about what they will say. One of the most undermining forces we face is the fear of what other people might think of us. Who we really are gets drowned out if we obsess over what they will say. Imagine you're at a vintage market stall and fall in love with a wacky hat or some funky purple boots. You hanker after them, but find yourself wondering what your friends would think, or your neighbor, or the person who works in your local shop. Check yourself. Would you judge others so harshly? No. So don't be stifled. What's the worst that can happen? Do it. If you've always wanted to join a street protest or wanted a bright pink car, go for it. As Emily Bradley suggests, chances are the people whose judgment you're so worried about won't turn a hair. Now let's have a look at an article in AARP, the magazine, under the heading of Real People. This one is Last Chance Ranch, where the zebras roam free. Claire Staples left a glamorous career to rescue mustangs, horses, and a few lucky others. In the U.S., horses are companion animals. We don't kill them for their meat or hides. But if their owners don't want them, for whatever reason, they're often bought at auction and shipped to Canada or Mexico for slaughter. Wild mustangs get rounded up and sold the same way. Even zebras and other exotic animals can end up in kill pens. They're often the babies of mothers that have been bred in captivity and then hunted for sport. The public can buy horses and other animals from the kill pens before they ship, and that's what I do. I used to work in the entertainment industry as a producer. I had all the material and external things that were supposed to fill that hole in your soul, but they didn't work. At 50, I wanted to change my life. I had always loved horses, so I started riding again. That's how I heard about the kill pens and slaughter pipeline for horses. When I saved my first Mustang, I boarded him at a stable. Then I bought my first ranch in Calabasas. By the time I had met and married my husband, I had 9 horses and a few donkeys. I started visiting wild horse sanctuaries to see how they worked. And I turned to my husband and said, "We're going to need a bigger ranch." With a 9,000-acre property in Oregon, I could rescue more horses, and eventually I started a nonprofit to support their care. We currently have 260 horses and about 60 burros. If the animals are healthy enough, we turn them out with a herd we think they will like. They live like wild horses, though we do daily checks to make sure they're healthy and well-fed. Rescuing horses has taught me a lot about patience, forgiveness, and living in the moment. But the main thing it has taught me is that you can't achieve happiness by going after material things for yourself. For me, seeing the light come back into a horse's eyes, letting it run free, and watching it grow into its own happiness, That's the greatest joy there is. And this article, The Ride of His Life. One-time NASA recruit Ed Dwight finally made it to space. Back in 1961, I had been an Air Force pilot when I received a letter from President Kennedy encouraging me to apply to the NASA training program. I was accepted and finished 7th out of 17 in my class. While there, I experienced a lot of racism, discouragement, and even veiled threats from some of the NASA training leadership, especially after the president's assassination in 1963. Everything changed with his loss. Still, the black community put a lot of its hopes in me. I was on magazine covers, Jet, Sepia, and received thousands of fan letters a week. But I wasn't selected to be an astronaut. In 1966, I resigned from the military and went to work for IBM. And then I became a sculptor, specializing in figures from African American history. The first black astronauts weren't named until 1978. I was involved with those astronauts from the very beginning. They would call me to talk, and they would bring me flags that had been to space. Some of them visited my art studio in Denver, and they've even taken a few of my sculptures into space. After it became possible to go into space as a tourist a few years ago, a group of black astronauts started talking about trying to make it happen for me. Once I heard their proposition, I said, yeah, let's do it. It took a while to arrange, but sponsorships to fund my spot were lined up from Blue Origin, the space flight company owned by Jeff Bezos, the nonprofit Space for Humanity, and the Jason and Jamie Robinson Family Foundation. In May, I joined a ride on Blue Origin's New Shepard rocket. At 90, I was the oldest person to go to space, a couple of months older than William Shatner when he flew. I had logged more than 9,000 hours of flying time, including as a test pilot and a zero-G pilot, so I had some experience. I had even been up to 80,000 feet, where I could begin to see the blue shell of the atmosphere. But there are some things you can just never prepare for. The noise of the rocket on liftoff was unbearably loud. They gave me and the other five crew members earplugs to dampen the noise. And I had assumed that as we left the atmosphere, there would be a gradual separation from light to the darkness of space. But there isn't. It's a sharp border. It seemed like a dark curtain had fallen over the large windows as we were sitting next to. And then suddenly we were floating in zero gravity. Out the window I could see the Earth. Everything looked ordered and neat and wonderful and beautiful. There was no separation between countries or states. And you ask yourself, as wonderful as it all is, why can't the people who live on it get along? Why don't they want to take care of such a beautiful place? It's almost spiritual to see how precious our planet is. I'm glad I finally got to see it from that perspective. Ed Dwight, 91, works as an artist in Denver, where his studio produces bronze sculptures of historical figures. Now, how about a look at the magazine? This is 70. Catching up with Dionne Warwick. At 84, the six-time Grammy winner is still touring. Last fall, she was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. In late February, the New Jersey native returned from an overseas tour to resume performing in the United States. You're back out on the road? What's next? My plan is wherever God decides to take me, that's where I'm going. Do you have any travel hacks to share? I wish there was a secret that I could share with you. You just have to do what you got to do. If music hadn't worked out, did you have a backup plan? Absolutely. Teaching. That's what I went to college for. In October, you became a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame member. Was that your favorite award? I have to really go back to receiving my very first Grammy. Warwick won it for her 1968 mega hit, Do You Know the Way to San Jose? It meant an awful lot to know that I received the Grammy in an area that was not designated for black people. So it kind of opened doors for my peers to walk through. Any regrets? None whatsoever. It's called life. And 70 years ago, polio is vanquished. On April 12, 1955, the polio vaccine developed by Jonas Salk was licensed for use. At the time, the disease was killing or permanently disabling more than 500,000 people worldwide each year. Following a mass immunization campaign in schools, cases reported in the U.S. fell from nearly 29,000 in 1955 to 161 by 1961. And let's look at fashion. Shorts, styled right. 70 plus, let loose your lower limbs this summer. Summertime is prime time for shorts. If your trusty standbys have been seeing better days, you may be ready for something different. We are creatures of habit. We choose the same styles, the same colors over and over again, says Gretchen Bell, a professional wardrobe stylist in Seattle. When we step outside of our box, we often find we look great in something that we had never expected. Fit. Okay. A bad fit ages people the most. Bell says, having extra fabric like pleats or selecting a very wide short that is too big adds weight to your frame. Shorts should just slim the body and fit in the waist and stick with flat fronts. Proportion. Outfits that look great are always in proportion. With shorts, you're looking to show off your legs. Balance your look by showing a bit of your arms, too. Try rolling up your sleeves or wearing a three-quarter sleeve. Tucking. An untucked shirt can look sloppy, and it also cuts off your body in an unflattering way. If you don't want to tuck it in all the way, consider a French tuck with the front of your shirt tucked into your shorts and the back left out. Length. Styles that are too long can also create problems. Shorts for men should always hit above the knee, never below. Women often assume that a long short looks better because it offers more coverage, but a shorter short can often be more flattering. Shorts are with an inseam in the mid-range work best for most people. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.